Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Tuesday, October 12th. Here's the political world we're living in right now. Headline from Huffington Post. Texas Republican Alan West goes on anti-vaccine rant while hospitalized with COVID-19. Yep, I didn't make that up. We'll talk to Huffington Post Washington Bureau Chief Amanda Turkle in a minute, and we'll see some other things they're reporting. But maybe you know Alan West, the former congressman who's now running for the Republican nomination for governor of Texas. HuffPost reports that West got monoclonal antibody treatment in a Dallas hospital emergency room as he battled pneumonia and low blood oxygen levels from COVID. From that hospital, he praised the monoclonal antibodies treatment, but railed against Big Pharma making money off the vaccines. But as the article notes, Big Pharma makes the monoclonal antibodies too. And they're much more expensive than a vaccine, and you have to be hospitalized for days and get them through an IV. But from his hospital bed, West said, quote, "After this experience, I am even more dedicated to fighting against vaccine mandates." So that's one story. Another one on HuffPost via the AP is Georgia election workers fired after allegedly shredding voter registrations. That was in Fulton County, home to Atlanta. So multiple election workers were allegedly destroying voter registration forms. Now, we don't know who or why yet from what I've seen, but maybe that's the latest way to prevent people from voting in cities. We'll see. Related story, another HuffPost headline. The feds have made 625 plus Capitol riot arrests. They still have a long way to go. So that's how many people were allegedly involved just at the start. And remember former national security official Fiona Hill? Remember her from the impeachment hearings? Fiona Hill, with her career dealing with Russia and other non-democracies for a living, she was on Face the Nation this weekend with this analysis of January 6th.
This was, in effect, a dress rehearsal for something that could be happening near term in 2022, 2024. We've got election cycles here that will heighten the tensions. And once people start talking about violence, once a threshold is crossed, we're in a danger zone.
Fiona Hill on CBS's Face the Nation Sunday morning, even while over on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace, the second highest ranking Republican in Congress, Steve Scalise, refused to acknowledge even now that Joe Biden won the election. He said many states did not follow the Constitution in how they certified election results. And if you think about it, Steve Scalise could become Speaker of the House if the Republicans pick up just a few seats in next year's midterm elections. All the more reason from the Democrats' standpoint to make sure they have accomplishments to run on next year, especially President Biden's physical and human infrastructure bills. But referring to Senate Democrats Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, Senator Bernie Sanders recently said this.
Mr. Manchin deserves to be heard. He deserves to get some compromises, but it is wrong for one or two people to think that they can dictate the outcome of this process.
And on Friday, Senator Sanders said, is there a possibility, a horrible possibility, which would be so terrible for this country that because two people refuse to do what 96% of the caucus wants, that nothing will happen? There is that possibility. I think it's a minimal possibility, but that possibility exists, unquote, from Senator Bernie Sanders, chairman of the Finance Committee these days, among other things, on Friday. With me now, HuffPost Washington Bureau Chief Amanda Turkle. Hi, Amanda. Thanks for coming on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi.
Why is Bernie Sanders talking like that, warning that the whole thing might fail?
Well, it really hinges on what two senators from Arizona and West Virginia want to do. Right now, I mean, it's pretty remarkable that you have the entire Democratic Party essentially behind Biden's agenda. But it could fail, essentially, because of Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. Right now, it's not entirely clear what they want, especially Sinema, who has been less clear than Manchin, except that they don't like the fact that it's going to cost, you know, potentially over $3 trillion. They want it closer to $1.5 trillion. And obviously that's a huge difference, and it means a lot of important things will be cut. And when you start cutting things, the question is, who else do you lose? Do you lose progressives who say, you know, I can't support a bill that doesn't have, you know, these various like health care, child care, or other measures that I want? But if the price tag is too high, you might not get Sinema and Manchin, whose votes you need, because the Democrats have such a narrow majority, the slimmest of majorities in the Senate. And so right now it's not clear if this will pass. So Sanders is right.
And the article on HuffPost says Manchin and Sinema initially seemed focused on the overall price tag, like you say, but specifics of what they want to cut are not clear, and the mystery is feeding fears about the entire project failing, unquote, from your colleague who wrote the story at HuffPost. My question is, Amanda, if the two holdout Democrats want certain compromises beyond just the number, and they think it's good for their popularity in their home states to hold those lines, because why else would they be doing it, why don't they just say what they are?
That's a great question. You know, I've heard some people, and again, I think Manchin has been a little bit clearer. He has said that he doesn't like programs that are universal programs, like the child tax credit, for example. He wants it to be more targeted to people in need. But the levels and the thresholds he wants, the people making $50,000 has been floated, for example, that's pretty low. And the child tax credit has been shown to have really helped families out during the pandemic and made the economic downturn less bad, essentially. And so, you know, a lot of Democrats are uncomfortable with cutting so many people out of these programs. Sinema, less clear again. She said she's not on board with Democratic Party's proposal to lower prescription drug costs or to raise corporate taxes. I think that Democrats, if she tries to take out any prescription drug negotiations, I think there will be a lot of pushback, because that's something that's not only popular amongst Democrats, but it's widely popular with the public. I think it's something a lot of Democrats have said, that, you know, we will lower your prescription drug prices. And I don't think they're going to let her take that out. But, you know, if she stands firm, again, they need her votes. And so some people have given Sinema the benefit of the doubt that she's been more clear behind the scenes, that she's just not letting it play out publicly. But so far, I haven't seen much indication of that, because I think if she had been clearer, things would have leaked out more. And it seems like right now it's more focused on the overall price tag and less on specifics.
Spencer in Berkeley Heights, you're on WNYC with Amanda Turkle, Washington Bureau Chief. I almost said Wash Bureau Chief for Huffington Post, but it's Washington Bureau Chief for HuffPost. Spencer, hi, you're on WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Good morning, Amanda. I'm probably one of many throngs of Democratic voters who are trying to figure out why our elected representatives in Congress for so many years can't seem to, for lack of a better phrase, get it together. The Republicans always come across as being monolithic. They come across as being lockstep. That is, unfortunately, fairly dangerous for the country right now. But in a situation where the Democrats should be equally in lockstep trying to, you know, get to the finish line, they can't seem to operate in concert or in harmony. Manchin, to some degree, I can understand, but again, he keeps thinking that the Republicans are going to play nice and play fair. They're not. Sinema, as you mentioned, at least publicly, is playing everything so close to the vest, no one knows what she wants. That makes it hard from an optics level to think that she has any interest in trying to get to a goal that is beneficial for all. And I'm afraid that if the Democrats don't get this legislation passed, as you implied earlier in the program, Biden and the rest of the Democratic leadership are going to lose in the midterm elections. And what does that then say for the country going into the next election cycle?
Spencer, thank you. Amanda, you want to compare the two parties from your point of view to Spencer's point that the Republicans seem to go in lockstep with each other, the Democrats seem to have a harder time getting together on a message that they all stick to or a position?
Yeah, no, I think Spencer gave a great summary of why so many Democrats are frustrated right now. Right, Republicans do tend to get in line more, even if it's on something as crazy as wondering whether Biden won the election or not. There are a few detractors now and then, but you do hear this trope of Democrats being in disarray more often, whether or not it's true. You know, I think right now there's so much focus on the Senate, but I think it's pretty remarkable that the House, which does have a larger Democratic majority, has been pretty unified. You have some, you know, you have quite a few moderates and progressives who, you know, they disagree on sort of the timing and the priorities, but they're, I think, ready largely to pass, Biden's agenda. Where the trouble comes is in the Senate, where it's more skewed toward conservatives and Republicans, and it's much harder for progressives to gain a true majority or a true foothold. And so I think Democrats right now, the question is, what's worse, passing nothing, passing, you know, a much smaller bill at $1.5 trillion, or passing something very large like what Sanders wants to do? The moderates seem to think passing something large will hurt them. But, you know, in not only the midterms, next month we have Virginia's elections coming up where there's a tight gubernatorial race. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that a lot of people are afraid that if Democrats can't get their act together and do anything, voters are going to say the base will be discouraged and won't turn out. And voters will say, you know, what's the point of giving you control of White House and Congress if you can't even get this done?
Is there a political analysis for Virginia, if it's a bellwether state in that respect, a state where either the Democrat or the Republican might win the gubernatorial race next month, that it would be worse for the Democrats to pass nothing or worse for the Democrats to pass something that's seen as too big or something that's seen as too small?
I think right now it's a little too early, and we're going to see the results of that next month. Virginia is obviously a traditionally a very Republican state that is turning bluer. Even the Republican candidate, Glenn Youngkin, is having to sort of moderate some of his stances, or at least be less vocal about some of his more conservative stances than he was in the primary, to appeal to a lot of these independent voters in the state. But Terry McAuliffe, the Democrat, who's a former governor, is saying that, look, Biden's not really popular right now. And he seems to imply that, you know, some voters may not like all this. But, you know, I think there are also people saying, like, you know, no matter what happens in Virginia, don't read into it too much. It doesn't necessarily tell you what will happen in the midterms. And I think Democrats are also cautioning that, remember, Democrats, the party in power, the party that controls the White House, tends to lose seats in the midterm election in Congress. And so that's another thing that Democrats are having to work against, another historical trend that doesn't bode well for them.
Here's a Kirsten Sinema question from Sean in Maplewood. Sean, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hi, Brian. Hi, Amanda. I just want to make a couple quick points. One is, it is interesting that if there hadn't been the miracle in the Georgia runoffs, the situation Biden would be dealing with. But I bring that up because I wonder, do Democrats really appreciate, you know, how tenuous the situation is, that it could change overnight with somebody not waking up in the morning because they're, you know, elderly, a member of the Senate or whatever. And then I also wanted to ask Amanda, is anybody concerned that Sinema, because frankly, I think she is the senator of Sinema, she's a narcissist, and is there concern that she might switch parties and become a Republican?
Amanda?
Yeah, so parties? I haven't heard anyone suggest that she's going to switch parties yet. I think there has been some speculation on whether or not she's going to run again, because some people find what she's doing so befuddling that it doesn't seem to make sense if she wants to run again, because she's ticking off so many people in the Democratic Party. But, you know, we haven't heard any indication that she won't. You know, there are other arguments that what she's doing is smart politically, and she's showing her independence sort of in the, you know, you could argue in the legacy of John McCain, sort of bucking her party when she thinks it's useful. But no, I haven't heard that so far. And I don't know if Mitch McConnell is courting her behind the scenes. I find it a little unlikely that she would become a Republican, to be honest, but he is going out of his way to praise Manchin and Sinema to keep them happy. Obviously, there was some disappointment with her when there are times that there is video or photos of her looking friendly with McConnell. But I would say so far, it seems like she'll stay a Democrat.
Does Biden have any leverage over Manchin and Sinema on the one side and progressives like Sanders on the other? I hear some people in the media say, oh, Biden just needs to be stronger and knock heads like LBJ and things like that. But what leverage can Biden assert?
Right. I think that's, those were different days when I think presidents had a little bit more leverage. And, you know, you had things like you had more pork, you had more earmarks. There were more favors that were passed around, for example. I think Biden, I don't know how much leverage he has, honestly. You could say that, I guess, Biden could come out and he could campaign against them and support a primary challenger. But realistically, I don't think Biden will do that to Manchin or Sinema. I think that a lot of Democrats are fairly deferential to Joe Manchin because I think there's a political calculation that he's maybe the only Democrat who could win in West Virginia right now. Mm. And that if Joe Manchin goes, he'll likely be replaced by a Republican. And I think there's a case for that. I think that's different with Sinema, where you've seen the Senate seats go back and forth from Democrats to Republicans. But right now, there are two Democratic senators there. So I think it's a little bit harder to say that Sinema is the only Democrat who could hold that seat. But again, it's not really Biden's style to come out and play hardball and to go against them. And, with Bernie Sanders right now, I think, I think he's a lot more on board with Sanders' approach. Sanders wants to pass, this full, robust Biden agenda, and it's the conservative senators who are the ones who are sort of blocking that. But Biden has told lawmakers that the number, though, he believes is going to have to come down.
Yeah, but with respect to the progressives from the Bernie Sanders camp, if you want to call it that, in the House, Biden seemed to switch sides to their side recently, from saying pass the physical infrastructure bill first, and then we'll go on to the human infrastructure bill. And the progressives were saying, no, we don't trust the likes of Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema to pass the human infrastructure bill at all if we give them the infrastructure bill, the physical one first. And Biden flipped, right, to be on the progressives' side on that and say, okay, we have to pass these two things together.
Right, and I think, realistically, Biden knows that the progressives could tank the infrastructure bill in the House. There are enough of them, and he needs their votes. But it's sort of remarkable if you look back at the Democratic primary when, Biden was not the choice of progressives. Biden was known as more moderate. Progressives were on the side of Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, and other candidates. And now progressives are, there are some disagreements, but are fairly behind his domestic agenda. And he's finding that they are some of his most valuable allies. And where he's having trouble is with the more moderate and conservative members of the party.
Texas Republican gubernatorial hopeful Alan West, who I mentioned at the beginning of the segment, railing against COVID vaccines from his COVID hospital bed. I'm tempted to laugh, but too many other people's lives are at stake. Does he think that's the road to being elected governor in Texas? And beyond that, why is there this growing movement in the anti-vax world towards celebrating Big Pharma's expensive monoclonal antibodies treatment while trashing the vaccine as a Big Pharma plot to make money? Does it not matter that it doesn't make sense?
That was crazy. He tweeted, instead of enriching the pockets of Big Pharma and corrupt bureaucrats and politicians, we should be advocating the monoclonal antibody infusion therapy, which is an expensive medical treatment that he received from doctors. Not everyone is available, and it probably saved his life, and he probably didn't need it if he would have been vaccinated. But that's from Big Pharma. This didn't just arise out of some random person. Pharmaceutical giants are the one who manufacture this. And so he is touting Big Pharma while rejecting the vaccine. And, of course, Alan West, while saying the vaccine, you can't trust it, he has been in favor of ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, these other remedies, you know, quote unquote remedies that the, you know, these anti-vaxxers believe in that are completely unproven, and not only unproven, show that they can hurt people because they're not meant and they don't actually help with COVID at all. And so, you know, it's incredibly, it's sort of humorous because it's so outrageous, but it's incredibly devastating because there are a lot of people who believe the types of things that Alan West is spouting, and it's costing people their lives.
Well, maybe it's going to turn out that Greg Abbott is too liberal for the people of Texas, and Alan West will be their next governor. Amanda Turkle, Washington Bureau Chief for HuffPost, thank you very much for coming on today.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.